The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media. Give us feedback on this podcast or ask tech questions by calling the voicemail hotline at 877-414-5856. That's 877-414-5856 to get your questions answered.
Terry?
I'm here.
Oh my God, I can hear you loud and clear. No, we were having issues. Apparently, a couple of our phone lines are sounding like a Geiger counter is going off on a couple of them.
No Geiger counter sound here.
Well, that is good. We're very happy because we can actually do an interview, and instead of having to worry about clicks and pops and it was.
And you know, when you do an interview show, that's sure helpful.
Yeah, kinda. So we've learned. Now, before we dive into everything, how are you doing health-wise?
I'm doing very well, thank you. The smile on my left nipple is looks like it'll be permanent. And it's fine. I'm relieved and glad to get it all behind me. And I've said this so many times, but I can't thank people enough for the way they came to my help. It was truly remarkable and a blessing. I don't know what to say other than that. It just renews my faith in people. And we hear all this stuff from these experts about how people are this way or that way, but it just never ceases to amaze me that people will. I have great faith in people, not only to do. I think they're smarter than most people think. But I think they will generally do the right thing if given the opportunity. And not that helping me was the right thing, but it sure was wonderful.
Well, and to bring everybody up to speed, essentially you had posted something along the lines of, and I'm going to try to paraphrase, and if I veer from the original story, let me know. You essentially discovered that there was a lump in your breast. Or chest or pec, as it were, and you don't have health insurance. And
right.
And so I think someone had encouraged you to post this tale and at least post a was it Jeff Jarvis who encouraged you to post the a PayPal donation link?
Yeah, I wanted to write about it because I had learned I had just come from an appointment with my surgeon who he told me that he was going to charge me a ridiculously low amount of money, and that he was going to encourage the other doctors to do that, and that the place where I had the surgery done had offered me a discount, and I just thought that with all the stuff we hear about healthcare in this country, that it would be interesting to share with people what I had learned. And Jeff, he read it and he said, "Well, why don't you put a tip jar up there?" And so I was reluctant to do that, but I did it, and people just blessed me. I mean, it was. It's like I said in a subsequent entry. It's going through surgery without health insurance is nothing compared to going through surgery with friends.
Hmm. Now, did you receive enough donations to cover the cost of the surgery?
Not entirely, but it certainly made it doable.
Yeah,
I was in an absolutely untenable situation. On a Sunday afternoon, and by Tuesday of 2 days later, I knew that I wasn't that at least we would be able to have the surgery, and I could structure payment arrangements with people after that.
Now, had they known whether it was just a lump of tissue or whether it was cancerous before?
No,
the surgery?
We didn't know.
Okay, so you had that to contend with.
Pardon me?
You had that to contend with on top of not knowing whether
right, and I mean, I didn't think it was, but, you just never know.
Yeah.
And when you're looking at something like that without health insurance, it's a scary thing. Without health insurance, you certainly don't want cancer.
Yeah.
But you really, really don't want something like that without health insurance.
Well, and speaking of, this kind of thing and people who are active in the blogosphere, Steve Rubell has come out this week and
right.
had mentioned that he's got skin cancer. Let's all get better soon, okay?
Yeah.
I'm sick. Of course, I've got a cold. It's like nothing compared to, skin cancer or like a lump on the breast. But is there something happening here? Is someone trying to tell us something that we're not hearing?
Well, I think if there's anything happening here, it's that we're appreciating each other a little bit more, maybe.
Yeah.
And I also think that, you know, there really is nothing we can't do if we're together, you know. And the blogosphere is a lot of things. And but my one of, I mean, it, to me, it's like a giant tribe. And, you know, that when one of us succeeds, we all applaud. When one of us, you know, has a problem like that, you know, we breathe a sigh with them. And, you know, so it is a giant community, and maybe even more so, because the thing a lot of people don't realize, Chris, about internet relationships and online relationships is that you really do meet people at core. And, you know, without any of the bullshit of, you know, judging people based upon how they look or, you know, how they smell or whatever. And so when you finally do meet people that you've developed relationships with online and they're members of your tribe, they think the way you do, you know, the kind of thing I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. When you finally do meet those people, like that's one of the reasons that Gnomedex was so sensational for me, was I got a chance to meet all these people. And, you know, and I go to New York and I'm at a conference here or panel there and I meet some more people. The relationship is just so much more than it would be if I had just read a book, you know, that they wrote or something like that. You really do develop this kind of intense, at core, you know, relationship with people online, and it's a lot stronger. I was in Texas today speaking to a class at the University of North Texas, and this came up in a question was, you know, aren't you afraid that we're all going to become this isolated world? And I said, no, I think it's just going to be the opposite. I think we'll have fewer walls. People get to know each other, spend some time blogging and getting to know other bloggers. And so I don't know how you always manage to ask a question, Chris, that gets me off on some ridiculous tangent.
That's
my
job. I have
no idea what I'm even talking about.
That's my job. Well, I mean, you know, I wanted to really kind of discuss that. I mean, I realize it's not exactly your, it's definitely not your forte, but it's certainly something that, you know, the human element, is, I think.
Well, I have some experience in it, you know, so.
Yeah, I'd say. And of course, the last time we talked to you was months before Gnomedex.
Right.
You know, kind of about the future of television and media. And dear God, there have been some major things happening recently. Big things.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you've got, of course, Apple doing their video iPod, then Comedy Central coming out and talking about Motherlode. Now, NBC Nightly News broadcasting their show online and
right.
For free. What's happening here? I mean, seriously, has the world turned upside down?
You know, CBS offering episodes of commercial-free episodes of Threshold because they want to encourage people to watch that. I think you're witnessing the coming apart of the mass media model, and I think my wife reminded me of this, but the last time I was on your show, I told you that I thought that you had the front seat on the roller coaster. Remember that?
Yeah.
I said,
yeah,
I do. The ride that we're on now with regards to all of these fundamental changes taking place around us, I thought you had the front row seat on the roller coaster. And I think that you're experiencing some of these things now. I believe that we've entered a time of what I call unbundled media. And I'm trying to take this message to my friends in broadcasting and, newspapers too. But we are in a time of unbundled media, and so... What all of these networks are doing now with their programming. I mean, let's take a look at each one of these, okay? When ABC made the deal with Apple to provide Lost, Desperate Housewives, for download and playback in the video iPod, what ABC did was unbundle those two shows from their program, from their programming lineup. So now that for the first time, instead of watching it on an ABC, being forced to watch it on an ABC station when ABC wanted you to watch it, They have separated that from the package that is ABC, and they are offering that to people. It goes far beyond that, too, because what they're doing is they're cutting out the middleman, and this has network affiliate stations shaking in their boots, and rightly so. In the case of Motherlode, which I love, and same thing with MTV Overdrive, what they're creating are video websites for unbundled media. You can go watch Comedy Central programs and original stuff via the internet. Now you can watch clips and portions of shows. So those clips are separated from the bundle, from the overall package that is Comedy Central. And the same thing with MTV Overdrive, NBC Nightly News, making that available to people, even though it's late in the day, it's still the same day. What they are doing is they're removing NBC Nightly News from the bundle that is NBC programming. So all of these things are evidences of the reality that we're now in, which is it's an unbundled media world, and I think it's going to be unbundled even more, that the user is completely in control, and while there still are mass media companies fighting that, it is inevitable that the consumer will win. And I think bloggers play a big role in this, because a blog creates unbundled media. A blogger's contributions to the media world are unbundled. They're individual entries that are delivered via RSS to people's readers. If you want the bundled package, you got to go to their website, and then you see it in the context of everything else that they're writing. But the truth is, the value of those entries stand alone, and they are delivered alone. So the technology that the blogosphere uses is essentially what's driving everything, and will continue to drive it. So I think it's a terribly exciting time, and I'm delighted to see these things happening. And I think they're going to accelerate. I think when ABC did the deal with Apple, it was a door opening.
Yeah.
And everybody else is going to jump through it. And what it's going to mean for the network affiliates, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, that was my next question. What are the network affiliates going to do? Seriously, I mean, I don't know if they're going to disappear entirely. I mean, some of them might. Their whole business model is driven on local economy. So how are they going to be attracting more people to their stations, knowing that the better produced shows are happening elsewhere?
Well, that's a pretty big leap. I mean, I think you're going to see some of that. I'm not sure that the networks will ever totally abandon their affiliate relationships, at least not in the near term. To me, the biggest harm that it has is on reruns. So, because if I can download the show and watch it whenever I want to, there's no way I'm going to sit still for a show in a rerun. And that's probably a good thing for TV anyway. I think you're going to see the network affiliates are going to, they already know this, but the reality is going to be even clearer, that the only thing that they do that has any value is what they can produce themselves, which means a market for a locally produced programming. They would argue it's too expensive to produce. I would say that that's bullshit.
Agree.
That there are a lot of people in the communities dying to be able to produce that kind of stuff. So, what it is just a time of extreme volatility, and there's a shakeout happening. And people who have gotten very comfortable with what I call kind of one potato, two potato, three potato, four life, they're the ones who are in real trouble.
And it's going to happen regardless.
I think so.
Yeah. It's inevitable.
Right.
If I'm sitting here and it's still a bit of a kludge for me to go through my routine where, I've got certain shows that I record, certain shows that I download. You know, I've got full. I pay for access to everything that I possibly can. HDTV tuner, you know, cable options out the wazoo, right. Everything. So. But it's not at the point yet where it just works. And I think that's where Apple's kind of ahead of the curve in that respect, although it's still kind of forcing me into the Apple model. I don't want to go into the Apple model. I don't own an iPod. I don't want to own an iPod. I don't want to watch video on an iPod. I own a PSP. I want to watch my video on a PSP.
Well, there you go. I mean, Sony announced a piece of software to you know, I thought it was great. One of the great things I enjoyed about GnomeDex was the guy who did the hacker stuff.
Ah, yeah, PT.
And he hacked the PSP. And yeah. So now Sony is making available software that allows you to encode basically any kind of video.
Yeah, but it's not that good.
It isn't?
No, I was talking about it at the beginning of the show. In having used it, there are certain things that the PSP manager does, the media manager, the new one, but yeah. I found for video transcoding, the easiest and the best one to use is a product called PSPware.
Okay.
It's very clean. It's cheaper. It's like $15. It's not an all-out PSP manager, but in terms of transcoding, it does a genius job with it, an absolute genius job with it.
Well, but there you go. I mean, so I'm with you. I'd much rather watch video on a PSP than a video iPod.
But it's not easy.
The application
yet.
Really doesn't matter. The point is that it's the paradigm change is what's important, and that's the big story.
Do you think that? We're going to see more models as it was in the beginning of television and radio, like with 2020 basically coming out and only having one sponsor for their program. Is that the way that we're going to walk or start walking in terms of?
I think you'll see a lot more of that. Sure, I think. I mean, and I think you know the question is when is all this stuff going to happen at the local level? And because. You got to remember that half of the money spent in advertising is done on the local level, and so the local people, especially local advertisers, they're years behind the times on a lot of things. But you know, and this is probably why I worry about my friends who work in local television is that when the change hits them, it's going to happen so fast. Because everything, all of the systems, everything will be in place, including expectations that aren't necessarily in place right now. That the television station that isn't able to immediately adapt is going to have a real problem. You know, it's I keep going back to, you know, things that people say to you. Some things just stick longer than others, and this one has stuck with me. That that television. Didn't hurt magazines by taking away their readers. Television hurt magazines by taking away their advertising. Mm. And, you know, the scenario that you and I are talking about here with an infinite variety of things that we can download and view at our pleasure is kind of overwhelming when you stop and think about it. And, you know, so we're trying a little bit of this and a little bit of that. You know, a rocket boom here, an overdrive there, a mother load here, and this, that, and the other thing. And pretty soon our time is consumed with all of these new products, and we're no longer paying attention to old media the way we used to do. Well, guess who is paying attention to that? Madison Avenue is. And so they want their money to go, their advertising money to go where your eyeballs are. And that shift is what will really hurt industries like broadcasting.
You know, we talk about this stuff and we know it's happening, but there just seems to be a glut of people, even our age, my age, who...
No, I'm certainly not your age.
Well, when I say our, I mean, I'm looking at Jake and, you know, Ponzi. I guess the 30-year-old generation, you know, the kids who grew up in the 80s, there's still a handful of us, and even people younger than us, who don't understand technology, who don't get technology. And to them, it's even more of a kludge to get the things that they want to get. Although they understand it. People understood Kazaa real quick in terms of what it could do for them.
Right.
With MP3s and whatnot. how is it really going to take, an Apple releasing a video iPod and selling shows like Lost and That's So Raven to, or Desperate Housewives, I guess is a better example, to really wake people up? When is it going to start hurting?
Well, I think the answer to your question is yes. I mean, that event really got the attention of local broadcasters.
Yeah, but in what way, Terry?
Well, I mean, they the world they live in is one of basic denial. You have to live in denial if you're going to constantly try to manage a degrading marketplace by cutting costs. And that's what the broadcasting industry has been doing. There are still companies that make a lot of money, but they're not growing. They can't find growth in the broadcast paradigm anymore. And they hear all this stuff about what advertisers are doing. For example, you've got Procter & Gamble and General Motors, two huge television advertisers, have put the word out to local stations that they will not buy time on a television station unless 25% of the buy can go to the internet. So that means that the broadcaster has to have an internet application to be able to deliver advertising for Procter & Gamble products and General Motors. And the truth is that most of them don't, and the products they do have suck. So it's money that is getting their attention. But then along comes this thing where the foundational the core money, the bread and butter money that television stations coming through a network affiliation with a network, that is now threatened. Because the networks, long ago when I started in the business, the networks paid local TV stations to carry their programming, and they paid them very well. In smaller markets, for example, and it's called network compensation. In smaller markets, many stations simply could not have made it without network compensation. It costs just as much money to run a TV station in Eureka, California, as it does in Los Angeles.
Now, is that as true today, though? The big draw, it seems to be, for television today is the nightly news coming from the local broadcasters.
Well, that's true. That's where they make a lot of their money. But they can't make in a small market, the advertising revenue isn't there to sustain the costs. It's like the size of the TV screen doesn't change just because you're in a smaller market. The size of the transmitter doesn't change just because you're in a smaller market. Those expenses are fixed. So network compensation was very important. Well, in the past 20 years, the amount of money that the networks have paid affiliates has been decreasing. And now, this year, for the first time, ABC has told its affiliates that it will pay no compensation for carrying their programs. So the next step is, you will pay me if you want to carry my programs. And we'll move into a giant, the whole thing will be turned upside down, and if you want network programming, you're going to have to pay for it.
So now, does that present a opportunity for independent content producers then?
Well, absolutely it does. Like I said, the whole thing is being turned on its ear, so local, people who can make that kind of stuff. I mean, the whole television market, it is the greatest time ever to be a producer of television content, because every week it seems there's a new cable channel. Your cable keeps expanding. It's impossible. Michael Rosenblum, his company produces all kinds of stuff for cable channels, Discover and Travel Channel and things like that, and he's got all the statistics, but I believe it's impossible to fill all of the hours that are available with original programming. There's such a demand for content just with cable channels that anybody who has a brain and the you know, $5,000 worth of equipment can make a lot of money.
So as evidenced by all those hunting shows.
Right. There you go. But you, if you think, if you can think of the show, you can probably get, you know, then you can go, you, and you got somebody who can sell it, you know, go to the network, the Travel Channel, whatever, and make the pitch. You can make pretty decent money making those things.
So, so then we just need to find somebody to sell the Chris Perillo show is what you're saying?
Well, that's, you know, you guys should be. Should be on TV. Somehow, some way.
I don't know. I have a face for radio, I think. But Chris could certainly be on TV.
I don't know about that. I'm a little scared of TV. No, no.
Well, anyway, the bottom line in all of that is that it's the world of television, even especially local television, is changing whether people want it to or not. And you know, it's just an exciting time. It's like I said, hang on to the railing of the roller coaster.
So now, what have you been doing during this roller coaster ride? What have you been up to lately?
Well, I've been, you know, thoughts about unbundled media have been becoming very clear to me, and ways that people can make money in a world of unbundled media. And I like to use the phrase unbundled media rather than calling it media 2.0, simply because I think that phrase is being hijacked by venture capitalists.
See, I think we should call it 3.1 now with networking.
Yeah, there you go. So I just call it unbundled media because, like, I stand in front of this class and these people have never thought of the idea of unbundled media, and yet they do it every day.
See, I think that the journalism schools still aren't really teaching internet journalism.
Well, yeah, they aren't. I mean, I told these people, I said, every time you download an MP3 file of your favorite song, you are participating in the unbundling of media. Every time you TiVo a show and watch it whenever you want to watch it, and especially when you skip the commercials, you are participating in the unbundling of media. So what I'm saying is that if that's where the demand curve is taking us, then it's logical that media, the creators of media, need to, with full speed, produce unbundled media. So in that kind of a paradigm, then how do you make money? And so that's what I go out and that's what people pay me for now.
They pay you for the how do you make money part, or
right?
So in a nutshell, what would your concept of how you make money with that? I mean, not to reveal all of your trade secrets here on the air, obviously, but I mean, what is the concept behind that?
Well, if media is delivered, well, first either. Some of the ways you make money are pretty obvious. You attach commercials to the unbundled bits, or marketing promotion of some sort. People pay you for that.
Kind of the old brought to you by Colgate or
right.
Something.
Yeah, you know, you can and there are a thousand different ways that you can do that if you're, you know, depending on the medium you're using to distribute the unbundled bits. But that's certainly one way. But I think. How do retailers, for example, how do retailers participate in the unbundled world? I show people the RSS page from Titleist, the golf company, golf equipment manufacturer. Here's a company that makes golf balls and golf equipment, and they have, I think, about 15 RSS feeds. Okay, if Titleist thinks it's, you know, now I don't subscribe to one of their RSS feeds. I probably would have 15 years ago when I was really playing golf in it because I used their equipment. But if Titleist is seeing that they ought to be providing an RSS feed, then I think there's room for everybody else to do that. So I think where you're really going to make most money is in at the local level, especially in facilitating that with the retail community. And who better to do that than somebody who already has credentials within the local retail community, and that would be a media company like a TV station.
So you take the local company is, or the local media property is essentially sort of staking their brand on bringing their relationships together.
Right. Well, I wouldn't say their brand. I think it's their experience of however many years it is in that particular marketplace working with the advertising community, and use that to bring retailers and retail companies into the unbundled world. There's a tremendous amount of money to be made doing that. And I will tell you this, if the media companies don't do it, somebody else will. But the beauty of a media company doing it is that they, first of all, they've got the experience in the marketplace. Secondly, they've got the vehicle with which to promote it. I think it makes great sense to me, for example, to have a TV station producing an electronic sale paper. And, you know, when you think about the technology of, you know, everybody who goes to a grocery store now has a little card that, you know, they scan it when you go through the checkout. And, you know, you can go to the grocery store chain's website and log in. You can select coupons, and then those are reflected in your when you check out of the store, because it's already, you know, the brain that runs the cash register is the same one that's talking to you on the website. And so, you know, you click on this coupon or that coupon or this deal or that deal, then it's reflected when you check out. Well, it's not, you know, it doesn't take a rocket science to figure out that you can do that in a, you know, if you can do that when they're logged in on a website, you can also do it in other ways too. So I think this idea of inviting the retail community, the advertising community, into the unbundled world is it's the next big local revenue producer for media companies.
And you're risking your whole career by saying that.
I have no career to risk anyway, so...
Well,
I'm just the iconoclast. I sit out there and fire these things away at people. No, I really believe that's true. I mean, the thing about new media, about 2.0, if you want to use that term.
I don't.
Is it's okay. But let's talk about bottom-up media, okay? Blogging, for example, is a form of bottom-up media. It's something that's bubbling up from the grassroots. It's you know, and media and the types of technological breakthroughs that we all participate with, they all happen at the personal level, you know, and personal is where it's at these days, not mass. So if that's true, then where is the personal? Where is the bottom? It's at the local level. And all of these companies and these wonderful technological innovations that these VCs fund, they're all these attempts to seize this huge, the topmost rung in a huge global marketplace. When people don't realize that where the money is to be able to do it at the local level. That if we spent one-tenth of the time trying to do something global, if we spent one-tenth of that time trying to do something at the local level, we'd be rich. Gordon Burrell, who's a researcher for mostly work for newspapers, but a lot of broadcast stuff too. He's the guy in terms of internet advertising research for local media companies. He has a slide that I use it too now. But if you look at the overall pie of advertising, it's 50-50 local national. In other words, if you take all of the money spent in the United States on advertising, half of it would be spent at the national level, half of it would be spent at the local level. Online, it's 77% national and 23% local. By 2010, he projects that it will be 50-50 online, that it will match the overall. So the real growth in revenue potential for advertising online is at the local level, which is why I find it so exciting working with, you know, local people. We're building the next step in. Remember, I talked about WKRN at Nomdex, WKRN TV here in Nashville.
Yep.
Well, the next thing we're doing with local blogosphere here is we're creating an ad network, so that the TV station will be running an ad network that is serving ads on all these blogs. So we're trying to help the bloggers make money, and increase the reach of the TV station in terms of selling advertising. We're in partnership with Burst, who's going to provide national ads, and providing national ads for bloggers who couldn't normally qualify for to be a member of the Burst network because they're not big enough. So by putting everybody together, we become big enough, and that's really cool, and that has a lot of potential down the road.
Why haven't we seen more rocket booms out there? Given that we have the power, given that we can do this, why aren't more people doing it?
Well, I don't know, and I don't know that they're not. You know, maybe we just don't hear about it. You know, I don't know. Chris, that's a good question. In this class I was in today, I said, how many, and there were about 40 people in the room. I said, how many people here have heard of RSS? Not one person raised their hands.
Wait, what kind of class was this again?
It's a media class.
Really?
And that's the first time that's happened to me, but I will tell you that most of the time when I do that, it's only a few hands. So, you know, when we sit down and talk, you and I, we are in a different place. And I think we're where it's going, but I still think there is a real, that geeks have a marketing problem. You know, we're very bad at selling our ideas to the public.
Really?
I think RSS needs an ad campaign. I really do. Even though people tell me, well, yeah, but people aren't even going to know that it's RSS down the road. They're going to be, that's why, let's call it feeds, web feeds, or some other bullshit name like that. I'm saying, well, you know, we didn't know what email was 15 years ago.
RSS needs a Hotmail, because Hotmail is what pushed email over the top. And I'm not saying Hotmail is being the penultimate example of an email client, because it sucks. But I mean, that's really what it needs. It needs the killer app that makes it easy for anybody to get it without really thinking about it.
Yeah. And you see, I think the people to make that happen are the local media companies. And, you know, that's why I'm encouraging my clients to do that. And, you know, take a little public service time and teach people about what, you know, what's available to them, and how it all works. Because, you know, I saw Pew came out with a study, I think, 2 days ago that said 57% of the people under age 18 would be considered content creators for the Internet. 57%. So that means that young group of people who are going to be, they're the very front end of the pig going into the python, they're already creating stuff, you know, and putting it online, whether it's a blog or, you know, who knows what. So, you know, that's where I think those people are much more hip to it than even people your age, Chris.
Are you saying I'm old?
It happens, baby.
I did look into the mirror the other day, and I did see a gray hair, so I had a Ponzi put wax on it and then pull it out.
It's all relative, man. you'll always be young to me, you know?
Oh, certainly. It's staying in the inside, the indoors in Seattle, where there's not a lot of sun, especially during the winter months, that keeps me looking that young.
That's your secret, huh?
Yeah, because I'm actually older than what most people think I am. Someone carded me the other day. I get carded every time I go into a bar, even though I don't. They card me for Coke. So they think I'm that young.
I would.
Most people do. It's just kind of sad that way. But you know, it's certainly, as you said, interesting times that we're in the middle of. We're not even on the cusp. We're in the middle of. I think the person who makes it easiest is going to, I think, win. And if some would argue that Apple's already done that, I would argue against that. Where do you think Apple is going to play a role in this whole sphere of media?
Well,
if you believe they are.
Well, I mean, I think they play an innovator's role. They play a, let's move the dot over in this direction and see if people follow it. I mean, you know, look what they've done with iPod. I think it's fabulous. But, you know, I don't know. I always view them as a minority player. You know, I'm sorry.
I think it's
a great company and they got wonderful products, but...
So if they're a minority player, would you consider Microsoft a minority player in this as well? Google?
No, those guys aren't minority players, I don't think. You know, I don't know. As an old television guy, I have a lot of faith in Sony. I always have. You know, I would never, if I was buying a serious TV, I would always buy Sony. And I think anybody who has worked in television will say the same thing. It just, we know. You know, because we work with it day in and day out. So if it has to do with video and it has to do with television, whether it's online or off, I think Sony's going to have a role in it. Are they there yet? I don't think so.
The only division I believe that's profitable at Sony right now is their gaming division.
Really?
Yeah.
Not a surprise.
And I think that's probably hanging on by the thread with the looming Xbox 360.
Well, people said the same thing about Kodak before they got smart.
Yeah, but look at how many thousands of people they laid off in the process.
I know, and how many millions of dollars they lost and everything. And
now they're the top digital camera seller in the country.
I know. I think
actually in the world.
Yeah.
That's what brand will do for you.
Well, I know what you know, and actually, I mean, to that point, the first like online company that I consider going to for printing photos, if I actually print photos,
is Kodak.
Yeah. Partially because they have the cheapest 4x6 prints.
Well, there you go.
Well, that's part of their strategy. I mean, they wised up. I think Kodak is a classic case of a disruptive technology and the danger of ignoring it. And they survive, but it's not the same company.
No, and Rochester, New York is certainly not the same town that it was.
Right.
Now, Terry, have you gone in and spoken with any of your clients, like station managers or executive producers, et cetera, since some of these recent changes, like the and I'm going to go back to it, Apple launching their video iPod and saying, hey, now you can get Lost and Desperate Housewives, et cetera. Have you gone back to them and either to say, see, I told you so, or, okay, what do you think now?
Well, I have. I don't go back to say, I told you so. I go back to say that the window of opportunity is closing. You know, you can't wait for somebody else to figure it out because it's just going to be too late. There are a lot of people I talk to that I don't repeat what they say because I can't. But I know things about some of these companies, and I know what people who work in support areas that support the whole broadcasting industry think, and they're terrified because because of their positions and where they work, they see all this stuff, and all these executives who are trying to manage these public companies, and manage it by cutting expenses and. You know, slowly move this way or that. They have the same fear that I do. That when the bottom falls out, it's going to happen very suddenly. And a lot of my friends are going to say, "What the hell happened? Where did this come from? You know, how did this happen?" And it will probably come through the advertising industry. And like I said, television didn't hurt magazines by taking their readers. They hurt it by taking their advertising. And
now,
that's a very important thing to remember.
Now, so, why don't these people view this as an opportunity, though? Because, I mean,
because what you view as an opportunity, and I view as an opportunity, they view as expense.
But at the same time... They're presented with a lot of options to not be dependent on the network controlling what happens.
Well, they're still making a lot of money. It's not like it used to be, and it's getting worse. But they're still making a lot of money. that makes amends for a lot of stuff. And the other thing is that they're so involved in controlling and managing and controlling the operation through expense control that, you know, the idea of spending even $100,000 here or there, it seems ridiculous. And what the problem is that what's happening requires an entrepreneurial mind, a mind that can see beyond the numbers and say, you know, this is really going here. And what you have is a bunch of left brainers running these companies who say, well, show me the profit and loss statement. You know, write me a P&L on how all this is going to play out and how much money I'm going to make and when I'm going to make it, and then I'll work that into my budget.
So we're going to start seeing Barry Diller acquiring networks of local companies or local broadcasters. It'll be because I mean, like he's assembled the perfect network for doing it in terms of his online properties.
Absolutely, and I could well happen. Who knows?
Well, when it does happen, we'll have you back on.
All right, man.
Terry, no, we don't want to take up too much of your time.
Well, I appreciate it. It's a guy like me. It's my bedtime, you know.
I know. It's past 6 o'clock. Boy, you must be. You're up real late.
Well, I was on the road today, but I wanted to talk to you guys.
We certainly appreciate
I'm looking
it.
Forward to next year.
Yeah.
Is it going to be in Seattle?
Yeah, most likely. I just sent an email off to the Gnomedexer list and asked them for some feedback. We don't know if we want to go 3 days, 4 days in a single block, how we're going to do that. We may do something where we have 2 days of the traditional conference, and we may have something like 2 days of some kind of camp out session of sorts. I don't know how the hell it's going to work. I don't know.
Shall I bring my guitar?
Yes.
We'll sing Kumbaya?
Certainly. We need a theme song for Gnomedex, apparently. So, no, we like I said, I certainly appreciate the insight that you bring to the table, and I'm glad to hear your chest is doing fine.
Well, my best to Ponzi.
Certainly, and she sends her best back.
All right.
Well, most of her best. I mean, she gives most of her best to me, but she's giving you some best, too.
All right, I appreciate that.
Thanks again, Terry.
All right, man.
Appreciate it.
Good night.
Take care.
Live streaming of The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media and Limelight Networks. Download Windows Media Player 10 to listen to The Chris Perillo Show live every Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific, GMT-8.